Welcome to Murders and Monsters. Before we begin today, a brief warning. Contents may be disturbing and language may be explicit and inappropriate for young listeners. So listener discretion is advised. Hey guys, I'm Marie.
Hey, it's Shelby.
All right, guys. The case we're doing today is kind of a long case, and it's Shelby's turn. So we're going to forego all the what have we done books, shows, stuff like that. And we're just going to let her go ahead and jump into it. You ready, Shel?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Let's knock it out.
All right. So today we're going to talk about the Angel of Death, Donald Harvey. Donald Harvey was born near Cincinnati, Ohio on April 15th of 1952. He was the oldest of three children born to Ray and Goldie Harvey. And not long after Donald was born, the family moved to Boonerville, Kentucky, which is a tiny town in Appalachia.
That's a neat name.
Yeah. So, funny story. Okay. I have all the notes done on my notes on my phone, mm-hmm. and I do the little talk to text thing. So I was going over my notes and talking to my phone. I probably looked really crazy to some people, but when I said Boonerville, and I'm sure you probably hear the thickness in that, my phone auto-corrected it to Boonerville somehow. So I have to make sure that whenever I'm talking and it picks up the cornbread, that I have to go back and edit it so I don't make myself sound like an idiot on here. So
that's awesome.
That was interesting. Boonerville, though.
That's awesome.
Anyways, his family was poor and lived in the mountains of eastern Kentucky, where Harvey was allegedly abused by his uncle and a neighbor. As young as the age of four, I read somewhere it said five, but it did say four in some other articles. So somewhere around that age, up until he was 18 years old, he told no one about the abuse except for his sister. And that was only after the abuse had ended. It was said that he was well-liked by his teachers, however isolated by students. And I threw that in there mostly because this might have been like, he probably didn't know how to interact with people his age because right. He had been, you know, through a lot even as just a young child.
Yeah.
Harvey dropped out of school after the ninth grade, but eventually did earn his GED through correspondence school. He was unemployed, and young Harvey ended up going to see a grandfather who was dying in a hospital in Kentucky. And it was here that it said his fascination with death began.
Mm-hmm.
After becoming a regular visitor at the Marymount Hospital, he was asked to become an orderly by the other nurses. He gave patients medications and saw to both their physical and personal needs. See there, I said needs and my phone put knees. He became obsessed with this feeling of power over the helpless as he controlled all the routines that would keep them alive. Now, this kind of made me question about his childhood because maybe he felt like he was helpless, and as he was abused as a child, maybe he felt powerless. So maybe that control over other people just kind of took in, you know, maybe he just kind of realized that he was looking after these people and literally their lives were laying in his hands. He looked after the people that were much older, had like some cardiac problems, you know, things of that nature. Yeah. So they like depended on him to keep them alive. So I kind of felt like that may have been where his line came from.
Sure. Quick question. Mm-hmm. So what actually was his capacity at this facility? Like, what did he do? What was his job?
So he was an orderly, and I'm assuming back then, I don't know if it's different now. I don't really know a lot about the medical field or anything in that aspect. But he gave patients like their medications, refilled their oxygen tanks, you know, maybe changed their sheets or, you know, just little things like that.
That's to me, because I have been in the medical field
and given
before.
Their food too.
Sure. But at me, I have been in the medical field before a little bit, and no, I ain't nothing. I don't know nothing about, I don't know shit about shit. But what I do understand is an orderly is more like a cleanup person. Lord forgive me for people who are janitors, but a glorified janitor, as it is.
And but, I don't know if it was different back then, because this is a little older.
So this is what year is this?
So this was based out of like the 1970s at
Okay.
this point.
Well, maybe it
So I
was
don't know
a
if things might have had a little bit different meaning, you know.
sure.
You
Sure.
know, I it's hard to say.
And this was
I don't
like
know.
more of a retirement home, yes?
It was Marymount
Ish.
Hospital.
It was like a
So I,
veterans hospital, right? A
yeah,
veterans
he did work
asylum.
at a VA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I was just wondering.
I don't think the VA was his first hospital he worked at. This was like
Okay.
his very first
Okay.
hospital.
Okay. I was just
And
asking because to me, an orderly is not giving me my medicine. You know what I'm saying?
yeah.
It seemed like they
And
gave him a lot more responsibility than was his station, if you understand what
right.
I mean. Okay.
Right.
Sorry,
Yeah.
sorry.
No, I and later on I'll kind of touch on that too, but he did
Okay.
kind of mention at another point later on that the doctors and nurses and everything, the other ones, they were like too busy and overworked.
Gotcha.
So
Okay.
I don't know if that had anything to do with the fact that maybe he was given a little bit more responsibility, maybe because they were backed up. I don't know. You know,
I
and they
see.
may not have had that much help back then either. I mean, it's,
Right. I
you know, it's
see.
just kind of a guessing game right now.
I mean, they did pick up at like a, what was he at the time? Like 18,
Yeah, he
17,
was
18,
18.
18. Yeah. They did pick out an 18-year-old kid coming to visit his grandfather as an orderly. So maybe that was the case.
Yeah, he just became a frequent visitor, so they were just kind of like, hey, you want to come work with us?
Okay.
So,
All right.
but I mean, now it would be more like, you know, hey, you got like a degree in this field and everything else, you know. So,
Right. A little bit more background. Could we? Yeah.
yeah.
Okay.
So, jumping right back in, Harvey keeled for the first time May 30th of 1970, which was 2 weeks into his employment. He
Wow.
smothered a stroke victim with a pillow. He then went on to smother, hook up empty oxygen tanks, and impale a patient with a wire hanger in place of a catheter, some 13 more patients.
Okay, pause.
That's a lot to take in.
I heard. So I listened to a podcast today on this case because it's not my case. So all I do is just like an overview because I really like to hear the story from you. But what they had said about the catheter, and let me just go ahead and say I don't want an orderly sticking nothing up my hoo-ha, okay? Or for a man, God forbid, whatever the case may be. But this was a dude, right? That he did this to. It said that, and yes, this is going to be graphic. So if you're weak stomached, you might want to skip ahead about 5 or 10 seconds. But they said that he put the catheter in that was too big. Then he put a wire hanger into that catheter and ruptured his bladder and bowels.
Yes, I also heard that.
That makes all my stomach just draw up. You know what I'm saying? Oh,
So,
God.
here's something. He
Okay.
actually told an interviewer in 2003, and this was
Oh.
well after he had been arrested, but I just thought that this was convenient at the time that we're talking about his
Whew.
feelings of power and helplessness.
Sure.
So, he told an interviewer in 2003, quote, "Well, control and power's about the same thing, isn't it? The way I look at it, you controlling something, you got the power to do it," end quote. So I feel like him having the access to these patients, he probably felt they depended on him, like I said previously, and maybe they looked up to him to provide them with, you know, whatever care that they were responsible for. I don't really know. You know, other than that, they were cardiac patients, things of that nature,
Yeah.
were much older. They were 70, 80, you know, just kind of laying there sick.
Right.
And he just felt like he had all this power over them.
And that to me is terrifying.
Right.
I have always, little bit about myself. I have always told my daughter, because she's going to be the one that takes care of me when I'm old and decrepit and can't take care of myself. If you put me in a nursing home, I swear to God, I'll come back and haunt you. But this is why. This is why,
Yeah.
right here, because I don't want to be stuck in somebody else's care with somebody else having the power, like you said, over me to be able to do whatever they want to me whenever they want to do it. And I can't do anything about it. Nobody's there to
Yeah.
protect me. You know what I'm saying? So the
And most
power
of the
that.
time, they're going to do this when somebody else is not present. right?
Exactly.
They're going to do this on their own time.
Exactly.
Right?
And God forbid you're unvocal. You know what I'm
yeah,
saying? You can't
like
speak.
You can't speak. Or,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. God, that terrifies the shit out of me.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
And I mean, this was a lot of people. So my thought process here at this point in time, knowing that he didn't even gradually get there. I mean, 2 weeks in, he's already killing somebody.
Oh yeah. He jumped in with both feet.
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. so yeah. I was just kind of like, you know, I obviously I don't know because I don't have a mind that works that way, but you know, I stated like his fascination with death just kind of grew,
yeah.
but I was just kind of curious. We don't know the ages of the uncle or this neighbor that supposedly had abused him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what if they were like an older figure to him?
Like elderly almost. Yeah.
Yeah. You mm-hmm. know, or maybe appeared yeah. elderly to him or.
Sure.
You know,
as a child. Yeah.
Because some people, they have, you know, fully gray hair and everything else. They might look older than what they actually are. But what if they appear to be this person and maybe he was taking like his revenge out? I don't know. You know,
yeah,
it's just kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. His revenge. Yeah. I got
yeah,
you.
You know, it's just.
In that frame of mind that he has, apparently.
Yeah.
So,
he was
yeah,
molested yeah. for most of his entire life.
Well, he was molested from like 4 to 20, right? Like
18.
Like 18. Okay. But
yes,
yeah, I mean,
but
like,
I mean, still.
That's the majority of his young life. I mean,
yeah.
all the formative years anyway.
Yeah. And the
yeah.
fact that he was so isolated among the students in school
sure.
was interesting too, because maybe he felt like he couldn't connect with students or people his age, that he could only connect with people that were older than him.
Right, right.
You
I
know,
gotcha.
so
yeah.
there's just a few things here in his younger years that
right.
just I try to make sense of, and I don't know that I ever will, but you know,
right,
it's just
right.
a couple of working theories that I kind of had.
Sure.
Let's see. But because most of Harvey's victims were older and in such poor health, no one really suspected him. Besides, Harvey added in that same interview I stated previously, quote, most of the doctors would be so overworked, so busy, that a patient could die and the family doctor would not come in and pronounce the person dead. They have a resident do that. They just pronounce him dead and send them straight to his funeral home, end quote.
Oh, my God.
So.
That's the 70s for you. I mean, thank God that they don't do that nowadays. Anybody who died, if I'm not mistaken, anybody who dies like that, although they have, like, whatever illness or whatever they may have,
mm-hmm.
most are done autopsies on, especially if.
See, that's what
you
I
know
was
what I mean?
Thinking. I thought, you know, that they would at least do an autopsy to determine the cause of death.
Sure.
Right.
But I mean,
well, we'll talk about
I'm
that
not.
Later.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll just shut up.
Yeah. We'll touch on that a little later.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay.
So.
Some of his ideal way. Oh, let me, before I say this next sentence.
Okay.
Harvey had experimented, in a lighter term, with different ways of unaliving people.
Okay.
He would kind of experiment around the lines of different poisons.
Mm-hmm.
And some of his ideal ways of poison were by using cyanide, arsenic, rat poison, and petroleum distillates were among some of his favorite methods of murder. He put these chemicals in different foods, juices, pies, anything that the patient may ingest.
Mm-hmm.
He would also suffocate his victims either with pillows or by letting their oxygen tanks run out of air.
Mm. I'm looking up a fact because I have a fun fact about arsenic. Do you know what I'm looking up?
No.
So there is a only a certain percentage of people who can actually detect DETEC. Girl, I can't spell. Okay. I can't spell today anyway. Detect arsenic. I'm trying to look it up on my phone, y'all. I'm sorry. So there is a percentage of people. It's like 70%, or maybe it's not that high, who detected arsenic. I'm trying to look to see the percentage of people. The reason that I'm saying that 50% of the people, I'm trying to, I swear to God, I heard it today and I can't remember it. I'm just going to guess. So, cause I can't look it up on my phone. I mean, I can, but it doesn't tell me what I want to know. There is a certain smell to arsenic. It is like a sweet almond smell.
Mm.
And only certain a certain percentage of people are actually born with the ability to detect the smell of arsenic.
Interesting.
So, like, there was one of the people that he killed, and this is the reason I'm getting to a point, I swear to God. There was one of the people that he killed that the what's the autopsy man? What's his name? What do they call him? The man that does the autopsies. Shit. Coroner.
The coroner?
Jesus fucking Christ.
You caught me off guard. I was like,
my brain was like, I couldn't find the percentage. I know. I couldn't find the percentage. I couldn't find the name. I'm just fucking lost today. Anyway, so the coroner was actually a percentage of the a percentage of people who could actually smell that, and that was one of the ways it was detected, and they actually looked at him because of it, because of the smell of arsenic. No, it was arsenic.
It was cyanide.
God damn it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna shut up now.
It might be the same thing for arsenic, but in later term, whenever we get down to the bottom of all of it.
I'm sorry. Am I jumping ahead? I am so sorry.
It's okay. It's okay.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Damn it. I thought I had a fun fact. Son of a bitch.
No, but yes, they did smell. It was like a really faint smell of the cyanide that
okay,
they picked
fine.
up. It's okay. All right. Moving on.
I'm going to stop talking. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to just listen. That's what's happening.
Meanwhile, Harvey had struggled with depression and thoughts of suicide. I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm not 100% sure that he was ever diagnosed with certain disorders, but I mean, he was abused so much of his life that I'm positive he had some kind of just PTSD, trauma, just all kinds of stuff going through his head, you know.
Sure.
So I couldn't imagine what might have inflicted on him.
Right.
Through those years, he had actually met an undertaker named Vernon Midden, who introduced him to the occult and also how the human body operates in detail. And when their relationship went south, he imagined embalming this undertaker alive. But I don't have any research that indicates that he actually took action with that, but
right.
he just had thoughts on it.
Sure.
So, I mean, he was pretty sick in the head.
A little bit. I told you, I'm not saying anything else. So.
You're fine. I'm actually kind of laughing to myself because, again, the cornbread kicked in and it says, hey, meatball, continue. So I don't know what I was trying to say there. So moving on.
Yep.
It says he actually went on to continue to kill the elderly. He called himself the Angel of Death because some of his killings he described as being merciful. He felt that he was taking these people out of their pain, causing them no longer any suffering. And I'm assuming that's kind of what he learned about with this cult, that he became a part of. So he just kind of went with the Angel of Death things. I don't know. But in 1971, Harvey set the bathroom of an empty apartment in his building on fire in an unsuccessful suicide attempt. He was subsequently arrested and paid a $50 fine. He would try to kill himself later that year with NyQuil. That's a new brand if you ain't heard about it.
And I'm just saying. If you know, you know.
he would be arrested on suspicion of burglary in his own apartment building. He was drunk when apprehended, and he bragged to police about killing 15 people from the Marymount Hospital, but no one believed him, and his accusations were dismissed. So he was bragging about killing a bunch of people, and they were just like, no, you didn't.
Well, he was drunk, right? When they picked him up or whatever. So they thought it was just drunk ramblings or whatnot.
Yeah, you know, but I have had a few in my day.
Same girl, same.
And I probably said some off the wall stuff, but I just don't know. Just like with kids, drunk people usually just kind of say they're the truth.
A drunk man's words or a sober man's thoughts? I'm telling you right
Yeah,
now. Yes,
they
absolutely.
just it just kind of comes out. And I don't know, maybe he was just kind of rambling on. I mean, he might have been, like slurring his words and stuff.
Sure.
So they might have just looked over it like whatever.
But let's
I
not take it seriously at all. Let's don't look into it. Let's just chalk it
You
up
know,
and
and
let him go. You know what I
even
mean?
if you were like joking, I would be like, excuse me, what?
What
How
hospital
many
now?
people?
Yeah, exactly.
15 people?
I'd have to, you mean in today's world, I'd have to check into that a little bit
A
anyhow.
little bit,
A little
yeah,
bit, yeah.
but there's really no telling, kind of. I mean, this was the 70s,
Things were
so
so different then.
yeah,
So.
I know that there were a lot of, alcohol and drugs, and everything
Oh,
was just kind
honey,
of
there
like a
was
popular
hallucinogens,
thing.
LSD, and there was all kind of shit.
Yeah, so I mean, it was probably they might have heard stuff like that before, and they were just no, yeah, whatever.
Absolutely. I mean,
This,
the 70s were the years of the serial killers. So
yeah,
it is what it
yeah.
is at this point. So.
So, Harvey enlisted in the Air Force, but was asked to resign 9 months later and consequently tried to kill himself a third time throughout this. Harvey became even more entangled in the occult and joined a local group. He engaged in several relationships with men. Yes, he was a homosexual. And when he felt that one of his partners may leave him, he poisoned his lover's friend, his neighbor, and his father to death. He even poisoned his partner so that he was too sick to leave their apartment. There's that power thing again,
It is. It is.
and it was probably a lot to do with the power thing, but also abandonment.
Insecurity also. You know what I'm
Yeah,
saying? Yeah.
there's just this, he was just really troubled, and I'm not trying to make any excuse for him killing all these
Oh,
people or
no.
anything,
Yeah, right.
but you just see like a form of just buildup over time of what he went through. So Harvey even went as far as to kill one of his own ex-boyfriends, all the while continuing to poison, smother, and maim his patients at various hospitals across Kentucky and Ohio. And for those that are unfamiliar with what maim means, it is to wound or injure someone so that part of the body is permanently damaged. Just a really fancy word for unaliving somebody.
Well, I mean, he was absolutely disturbed, if nothing
Yes.
else. Yeah.
I mean, I mean, but you know what's weird is that in doing all this research and looking into him and everything,
Yeah.
after hearing about how his, parents moved from Ohio to Kentucky and everything,
Yeah.
didn't really hear else anything else about them.
I didn't.
Where were they at, whenever all this molesting was going on or all the
Yeah.
troubles that he went through, like even as an adult. I mean, I call my mom for this most minor inconveniences. I stubbed my
Yeah.
toe on the couch. Like, I'm mom. Like, I don't know why this happened to me.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I don't know.
Well, and
I
things were a
just.
lot different back then. I mean, hell, that's where latchkey kids and shit like that came from. Your parents sent you outside whenever the sun came up after they'd fed you a bowl of cereal and said, don't come home till the lights come on. You know what
Right.
I'm saying? So
Right.
as far as them being watched, they watched them damn selves. And then let me, and I can speak to that because although we didn't live in a town or anything, my grandma raised me and we were out there on the farm. And when I got up in the mornings, I ate a bowl of cereal and my ass was outside. Whenever the security light on the back 40 came on, that's when I had to come home. So, not saying that she wasn't watching me. Okay. She wasn't watching me. But I mean, if anything had happened, unless I told her, she wouldn't know. So
Right.
I'm not blaming the parents or anything like that. But it was just a different time then. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? So. But no, I didn't hear anything about the parents after that as well.
Yeah, I just thought that that was Interesting, because I was just wondering where they might have been all those years that his, you know, these
These things were
abuse,
happening to him.
this abuse was going on and everything else. I mean, it's just,
And maybe they were just trusted members of the family dynamic and they didn't think anything about it. I don't know.
That's true. We don't
I
know.
mean, it's definitely a possibility. So.
So, nearly decades later, Mr. John Powell was hospitalized from a motorcycle accident in early March of 1987.
I remember this one.
At this point, we know that Harvey has killed, his killing started in 1970 and is now all the way up into 1987. 17 years his killings went undetected. People were under the impression that they were just dying because of their health or natural causes. But when John Powell later died in the hos his hospital bed, in his hospital bed, I'm sorry, I can't word either. But a doctor performed a routine
Oh,
autopsy.
okay. Okay. Sorry. Sorry.
On his stomach. He caught a whiff of something strange that ended up being cyanide. Harvey was the attending nurse, and the investigation was quickly on to him, hard. And Harvey refused a lie detector test, and he was brought in for questioning, where he later confessed to killing Powell. Although he did not include the other murders that he committed, evidence mounted that Harvey was the nurse on duty for many deaths in two different hospitals, one in Kentucky and one in Ohio. At some point, Harvey did say that he did so because he felt sorry for Powell and his family. I don't know exactly the extent of John Powell's injuries from the motorcycle accident.
Okay, so he was unverbal, but he was able to shake his head. He was able to write stuff like that. So he was able to communicate. He just wasn't able to speak, is the way I understand it.
Well,
So,
he Harvey decided to unalive him
yeah.
because he must have felt that he was suffering. And,
Weren't they all?
or maybe, you know, I mean, he's had 17 years of straight practice.
Right.
You know,
Yeah.
there's no telling what went
I
through his mind at different times and everything, you know, I
think he's
mean,
just enjoying it at this point. Enjoying it at this point is my opinion because, I mean, he's a piece of garbage. We know that. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
So, authorities had enough evidence at this point to convict Harvey for killing 37 people over a 4-year span. He terminated the lives of 21 patients at the Drake Hospital in Cincinnati between 1970 and 1971. And then Harvey killed 13 patients at Marymount Hospital in London, Kentucky. Although he did mention in an interview at some point later in his confessions that he killed somewhere around 87 people.
Good Lord.
And I'll include this in the pictures on the Facebook group when we post. But in one of the pictures, there's like a whiteboard in the background. You can see Harvey's in handcuffs. And then there's like, I don't know if it's an attorney or if it's two cops or something. They were dressed a little different back then. But he was laughing at the names that were listed on the whiteboard behind him. And you can't make out the names on the whiteboard, but I'm assuming that it was just of the people that they convicted him of.
And I mean, he
So
admitted to these people, right? He like kept a diary or some shit, and they found it
he
somewhere.
admitted, yeah, he admitted to the 87, but they only convicted him for what I found was they convicted him of 37, but I have
But
47 names.
right, but that's what they could prove, right? Like that was the one that was those were the deaths that actually happened at the facility that he was at that time, correct?
Yes,
Okay.
yes,
Okay.
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And according to Harvey's lawyer's book, he would place a skull beside a burning candle, read a list of names, and look into the flames' flicker to determine who would die. He said, quote, "I had to have help from somewhere," end quote. And I picked that up from the cult that he was a part of.
Right.
So I don't know if that's maybe where he picked up the whole angel of death thing. You know, maybe Maybe at first they weren't really merciful, quote unquote. Hand gestures there.
I got you. Rabbit ears. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if maybe at first when his killing started, maybe they were just to kill.
Yeah.
And then at some point after he had met that midden guy,
right,
he decided to do the whole angel of death thing, take people out of their misery, kind of, you know.
Sure.
What's the word I'm looking for? Facade, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was going for.
Yeah.
But years later, in 2017, he is still in prison.
2017.
Yes. So in 2017, a prisoner named James Elliott sent letters to the Blade newspaper in Toledo, Ohio, saying he punched and stomped Harvey in his cell. He ended up killing Harvey. James was in prison for some burglary and maybe a couple other little thefts here and there.
Yeah.
But it was said that he did this to Harvey because he grew up in Kentucky near some of the relatives of Harvey's victims.
Wow.
Actually, I think that happened in 2016 and he was charged in 2017 for beating him to death.
Okay.
So.
Well, rest in distress, you piece of garbage, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, he 17 years.
Yeah. He spent torturing and unaliving these people.
Just, I mean, just trying different things too, you know, like it wasn't always just poison. He'd hold a pillow over their face until they stopped breathing, or he'd give them faulty oxygen tanks on purpose so that they couldn't breathe. I'm reading this stuff. I'm sorry. I mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
Doing the research on this guy, I was just kind of like, it's a curveball after curveball. I mean, he, and I don't know about this time or this age or whatever, you know, I kind of know what it is now, but I mean, being a homosexual that's been molested most of your life, you probably do struggle as far as fitting in with people.
Sure.
And you probably don't feel accepted with a group of people or anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at some point you don't know if, because this is my understanding of the way some people view things when they grow up in this kind of situation. As a child, you don't realize that everybody's life is not this way. Right.
Yeah.
So you become accustomed to it because you think everybody lives like this. Mm-hmm. And then you grow up a little bit and you get to know people outside of your comfort zone, your family zone, whatever it may be. And you realize this ain't okay. I mean, this is different. But at that point, you've already been through your formative years and you're like, well, then I have to figure out how to like commingle with these people, and they're probably gonna think I'm weird. So he was probably just so traumatized and so full of PTSD at this point that he didn't know how to function. However, that ain't the way to do it. Okay. Yeah. Taking out go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just gonna say, you know, I was kind of wondering too, because again, like he was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And like he starts this job at this hospital, mm-hmm. and then 2 weeks in, you're already killing somebody. So I kind of thought more of it too. Like, what if you're like, you know, in his younger years, as all this abuse was taking place and everything, what if he had witnessed crimes maybe from the people that were abusing him? And maybe
it's definitely possible.
I mean, I didn't find a name. I looked everywhere for a name on the uncle and everything, but I couldn't find anything.
Yeah.
So. Because I wanted to know maybe like how old they were and right. everything else, you know.
And this neighbor as well, yes.
Yeah, and the neighbor, right. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just couldn't find any information.
Yeah.
So it just led me to think kind of, you know, a little bit more of his background story.
Yeah.
Because I just wondered what led it to this. I understand that you're a sick individual. I understand that you have all these feelings and you don't know how to cope. And back then it you know, there wasn't all this like available help. You know,
sure.
Or easily accessible help.
Right. Therapy wasn't a thing back then. You fucking sucked it up and dealt with it.
Right. So, I mean, he's dealing with all of these emotions and behaviors and everything. And he probably, I mean, he could have had just different things going on in his head and he just didn't know how to do anything about it.
I mean, from the abuse that he suffered and from just all the things that he went through as a child. From what I understand, he had several different head injuries and things like that when he was growing up. And most of the serial killers and things that you hear of nowadays, if you look back into their background, they've had some sort of head trauma, some kind of, for lack of a better word, trauma in their lives, as far as like maybe sexual trauma, whatever the case may be. And it causes a shift in the brain chemistry. And it is what it is. I mean, that it actually does have a bearing on the people that they come to be as adults and things like that. But at 18 years old, when you go into a place like he went into whenever he was seeing his grandfather and then they offered him a job, I mean, 2 weeks in, you kill somebody.
Yeah, that's just
something. It's
an extreme. Yeah, it's just an extreme. Yeah, like, yeah. And in 2 weeks, like, that's the part that I guess I got really stuck on, because how are you so sure you weren't going to get caught? Or were you even sure at all?
Or did you even care?
Yeah. Or at this point, did you care?
You know what I'm saying? Because that's what the math ain't mathing. The chemicals ain't computing. I know y'all can't see me. I'm right here, like touching my head like a crazy person. But something ain't. Thank you. Exactly. That's exactly.
But I was just trying to make sense of it. And I know I'll probably drive myself crazy for the rest of my life as far as trying to put pieces together and everything.
Well,
and
we all. Go ahead.
And that may be why I'm so passionate in this field of just wonder, because I want to know. I don't care how sick it is. I want to know.
Same.
I want to understand.
Yes.
Because it to me, it doesn't make sense to go from this abused teenager that just had a lot of possibly potential. I mean, you got offered a job at 18 in a hospital. I mean, you probably could have made something out of yourself eventually.
You could.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that you're troubled, but what led you from point A to point B? That was point A of visiting this hospital because your grandfather is sick and dying, and then point B of killing somebody on your
two
own.
2 weeks in. 2 weeks,
two
in
weeks
is
in.
What kills me. It kills me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No pun intended. But it kills me. I know Shelby's over here covering her face right now because I said no pun intended. But, I mean, it does. It makes me totally not be able to understand the whole situation, because it's 2 weeks in. I mean, what happened?
Right.
What happened?
Right.
2 weeks in.
And then
to make you
what caused you to just experiment off of just, you know, suffocating somebody with a pillow or giving them a faulty oxygen tank? What made you want to go to the poison?
Or put, yeah. Oh, okay. That's what I was fixing to say.
Yeah.
Or put poison. Sorry.
Puh, puh, puh.
I know. Jesus. Or put poison into a person's Jello drink or straight into their IV line or something like that.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from? You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? What happened?
Yeah. What did you pick that up somewhere? Did you see somebody else do that? Did you just say, oh, let me, this is interesting. Dangerous.
Let me try this out.
You know, let's see what happens if I do this.
Let's try this out. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's just interesting to me. And then the fact that he joked about it with the cops once, he may have joked about it a couple of times. I'm not really sure, but regardless, he joked about it and the cops brushed him off like, yeah, whatever. You're just drunk and disorderly, you know, and just brushed it off. So then at that point, the power and the ego and the arrogance just really took over him. And he was just like, I can do this all I want and just continue to get away with it.
Well, the thing, okay, so I have a point to make here, is he had tried suicide several different times, and he had also confessed to the police that one time when he got arrested for drunken disorderly or whatever it was he got arrested for. On the outside looking in, was he looking for help? Was he looking for somebody to stop him? You know what I mean? I understand that a drunk man's words or a sober man's thoughts. Was he looking to try to tell somebody to say, please stop me?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's true.
I
and
mean,
here's
that,
another
it's
thing,
a,
too.
It's a point to look at. Sorry.
Because right after that second round that he tried to kill himself, he decided to enlist himself in the Air Force. Maybe he was trying to turn his life around, but because of his depression and those thoughts and
He had so much shit going on. Yeah.
In his mind. So,
right,
of course,
right.
another suicide attempt happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, it's the military. I mean, they'll kick you out for.
Oh, yeah. They had to get shit out of that shit.
Yeah. You got to get out of that. You know,
right.
If you're going to be having those
they're
kind
not
of
going to
thoughts.
be. Yeah. They're not going to be responsible for that. So they're going to be like,
Right.
all right, bro, you got to go.
You got to go.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, that was 9 months in. So, I mean, it's just, it's a lot with this guy. And I really tried to understand different maybe theories, but obviously
Right.
you can't look into it any further because he's gone, you
Right.
know? So that's the thing that kind of kills me though. Like, maybe this is just a me thing. I don't know if anybody else might feel like this, but even though somebody is dead and gone, I still want to try to make sense of what happened as much as I can. Of
Right,
course.
I want to try
In
to understand it as well. And that, I mean, that's one of the things that, and as true crime podcasters and as true crime aficionados, there's my 50 cent word for the day. Studying it, listening to it, reading it, all this kind of stuff, it is a morbid fascination for me because I want to know where it comes from. Why are you thinking this? What happened to you? Who didn't love you? Who didn't nurture you? What is happening? What is it so that we can at least analyze it and see if we can help people in the future? You understand what
Right.
I mean?
Right.
Because obviously there were times in our past where people didn't even know about anything concerning this whole situation. You know
exactly.
what I mean? The 70s were absolutely... they were drowned in serial killers and stuff like that. And nobody even knew what that meant. You
yeah.
know, it was like 78, 79 before the actual phrase serial killer came into play, and they were everywhere. Right. But we've come into an age now to where genealogical DNA and things like that. I mean, it's hard for anybody to kill anybody nowadays, and thank God for it. Thank God for it.
Well,
don't misunderstand me, but I still am fascinated with what is happening in the human mind that makes you feel this way, that makes you do these things. What is it? And I want to understand it. And I'm so glad that you're going into the fields that you're going into, because I am a sponge and I want to know what you know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, like I want to know like how the mind works, because I know like how I think is not the same way that you think, or not the same way that so many others think. Like, we all have a different thought pattern. And that alone to me is super interesting.
It's fascinating to me. Yes.
Yeah. Because, you know, and just how we were talking about last night, how we kind of brought up Ed Kemper being like a super genius.
Yes.
You know, and it's not always this way, but normally a serial killer is determined as being smart or genius or level of smart.
Above level, yes.
You know,
yes.
And to me, that is super fascinating,
right.
because I guess they feel full of power, that they feel like they can
know.
Do.
I don't know if it's so much of a power thing as they have so many things going on in their mind that they don't know how to process it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and maybe in that moment of unaliving somebody.
Yeah.
Just it brings them to a focus.
I don't know.
See, that's what I want to understand.
Exactly. And I don't know if we ever will. Patreon.com/murdersandmonsters. Y'all go join and listen to our ramblings on our Patreon every other week.
Yes.
Sorry. Shameless plug. It's fine. but I do. I want to understand it. And I don't know if I ever will, but I want to at least give it a shot. You know what I mean? I see that. Debbie's having a little problem with her microphone, but it's okay.
Well, the microphone is not moving, but for some reason, maybe I am.
I know. I do the same thing. I do the same thing all the time. I'm constantly moving it to hear myself better.
Yeah.
But anyway. But yeah, I mean, we don't have that mindset, that psychopathy, that the things that make these people run. We don't know what that's about, but I am super interested, fascinated, morbidly fascinated, according to my husband, because he's like, I don't understand how you... Okay, so All right, for a point of reference, no, check this out. For a point of reference, when I first decided to start this podcast, I told Mickey, I was like, this is what I'm interested in. This is what I want to do. And I would try to talk to him about cases and stuff like that. And he would sit there and he would look at me like I had just grew two heads. Okay. Because he was like, I don't understand.
I'm sorry, but I can just see it.
Right?
I could see his look like, what?
I mean, he's got this look on his face and he's like, how do you do this? How do you enjoy this? How do you want to read these cases? How do you want to read these people's lives and stuff like that and be interested in that sort of thing? And it's not like I'm fascinated in a, oh, look at this kind of way. I mean, it is a little bit, but it's not in a bad way.
Yeah,
yeah, it's different. And he doesn't understand that.
It's more of like an informative way because it's
exactly.
I want to understand how it works because my mind doesn't work like that. And I need to know how theirs does.
Right.
I want to know how, because I feel quite honestly,
mm-hmm.
any single person in this world is capable of unaliving somebody.
Absolutely. 100%.
You are completely and totally, and that does not give anybody permission to go and do that. Please don't take my word for that. But I feel like anybody is capable of doing it.
We all are. Absolutely.
You know, it's just interesting to me how, like, I react differently to a situation. Like, oh, I get upset at somebody, or, oh, I want to take my anger out. I don't think about doing something as graphic as
unaliving
somebody.
I'm not fitting to kill you. I'm not fitting to unalive you. I'm not fitting to
do that. I brush it off my shoulders, or if I am that angry, I'm just going to take it out a different way.
On the flip side of that coin, if you are threatening my life, if you are trying to unalive me.
Now, that's different.
Or the
that's
person.
A self-defense.
Exactly. Yeah. Or the person that I love or my children or whatever. If I am pushed to that point, will I not do it to not unalive somebody? Fuck no. If it's me or you, it's going to be you, bro. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you're trying to do it to
that's
me.
That's an act of self-defense.
Exactly.
It's not like, you know, when you're watching a TV show. I keep referencing Criminal Minds, but it's just the one thing I'm watching
now.
And it's the more, you know, it's literally a way because it tells you different scenarios that possibly could happen or have happened before.
Right.
But like how somebody gets angry at a wife or a girlfriend or something, a man specifically, you know, and because they're a brunette or because they have blonde hair or whatever, you know, then they just go out and search for somebody that looks like this person and then they go on and unalive them,
right.
You know,
because
they remind them of an unhappier time.
And
or
that's
whatever.
How they're letting out that need or want or whatever it is that they have inside of them.
Right. You know, but for me, like if I get upset and it's somebody that looks like my husband or somebody that looks like a past boyfriend or something, I'm just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Like I don't have that same chemical imbalance. So I don't understand how that reaction occurs, you know? Yeah. So it's just one of those things that I find fascinating to learn about.
Absolutely.
Not fascinating in a way like I want to know how you do it because I want to do it kind of thing. Yeah.
It's not like I'm fitting to write Ed Kemper in Tuscadero, California prison. Okay. So I'm lying. Would I be fascinated? She almost spit her drink out. I swear to God. Would I be fascinated to be able to have an interview with him? Yes. In a sick kind of way, I would. Just to see and talk to him. Would I do it? No, because I'm afraid that would disturb the balance that I have in my life and the balance that I have in my mind and stuff like that. I want to be on the outside looking in because it's just like you and I were just talking about. I don't really want to expose myself to that, but I do want to, on the outside, try to understand it. You know what
right.
I mean?
And like, I don't want to know because at some point in time in the career that I am going into, I will have the opportunity to interview with serial killers or just somebody has done something that is just unexplainable.
To be able to sit across the table from somebody that has done that and look them face to face.
I love it. You know, like I think it's just because I have a passion for putting those people away. And some people have a passion for doing the actual crime on the other end. And I want to know why. I don't really care.
Tell me everything. You know what I mean?
I
Tell
don't
me
really
everything.
care about the learning on how to do it, because
I want to know why
that's
you did it.
right. I want to know the why, not the
Right.
how. I
I
want to
don't
know the
care about
why.
all that. I want to know what in your mind set you to the point to where you
Cross that
took a
line.
person's life. Yes.
Yeah. And I'll speak on this too, because like I feel like when I get going on a subject that I'm super passionate about, I get excited. Like I like right now, I feel like I'm excited,
Same.
and like I
Yes, yes,
start
yes, yes.
talking and everything. You know, it's just one of the reasons why whenever you said you wanted somebody, you know, to kind of help on the podcast, I was like, boom, I'm in, because let me
Right.
do it. Like let
Man,
me do it.
and that's all I wanted. I wanted somebody that is as passionate as me, that is as fascinated as me about these subjects and these peoples and these people and these cases and stuff like that, so that we could do what you and I do. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because we have the same passion when it comes to this situation.
Right. And I feel like, you know, in a sense, and I don't want anybody to feel like this is like any kind of creepy thing or whatever, but in a sense, my mom kind of groomed me for stuff like this, to have a passion for stuff like this, because for as long as I can remember, she always watched like true crime shows. Like not so much as like, you know, like Criminal Minds and everything. Like it's a TV show, I'm sure, that's based on some relevant somewhere or some kind of real scenarios,
Yeah.
but more so like, you know, the first 48 people that this has actually happened to.
Right.
And the only thing that I could ever think about, like as I was younger and growing up and everything else, was like unsolved mysteries. I want
Yeah.
to help those families. I want to help those people find a
Absolutely.
closure. You
Yes.
know, and that was just
Yes.
something that I just always found fascinating. And it wasn't just so much for the family's sake or anything's sake. It's just most people want to know the why. Like, why does something like this happen to my kid? Or why does
Right.
something like this happen to our family at all?
Right. Did we do
And
something wrong? Did we, you know what I'm saying? Did we not set her
yeah.
up? Did we not set her up to go out and live her life in a way where she would be aware of the situations that she may
Right.
encounter? Yeah.
Right. And like sometimes, you know, my husband, he kind of thinks probably like I'm crazy. I if I go somewhere and I'm by myself, specifically if I'm by myself, because I lived alone for a while,
Long
you
time, yeah.
know, and it's something before I ever did that, I always made myself aware of all my surroundings at all
Right.
times.
Right.
I like people say like I have eyes in the back of my head, and I do, because no, you're not gonna get me like that. You're
Right.
not gonna, and if
You
you do try to
might,
take
but I'm
me.
gonna know how to. Yeah, we fixing to come. It's fixing to be a come to Jesus situation right
Yeah,
here, you
you
know.
ain't gonna just get me like that, because
Yeah.
I'm gonna come fighting. But
Right.
no, like all seriousness, you know, like I always check under my car. I always lock my car, you know, numerous times or whatever. And it doesn't make it lock anymore. It's just a habit, because I don't
Right.
trust people. And quite honestly, you shouldn't, because there's so many sick people in this world. You know, I kept up with the Natalie case from Aruba back in like the early 2000s.
Are you talking about the wait. Oh shit. The
Natalie,
cruise
Natalie,
case? She got taken from the cruise. Oh.
no, it wasn't. Was it a cruise? I know she had just graduated high school, and it was like the early
Her and her
Natalie.
family went on a cruise, and then she got her and her brother were out. If I'm
I
right,
thought she was with her
Natalie
friends.
Holloway.
Yeah, I thought she was
Natalie
with
Holloway.
friends,
Hold on. I'm gonna look it up. You
but
talk. I'm gonna look it
yeah, she just popped
up.
up on my TikTok today. And they were comparing the case with another girl that I think that was on the cruise, but I'm pretty sure she was with friends, because they were at a bar and she met up with this guy, you know, that Vandersloot douchebag. But you know, and stuff like that just
Oh,
always
okay.
frightened me.
All right. The FBI is seeking information regarding Natalie Ann Holloway, who disappeared on May 30th, 2005, while she was in Aruba on a senior class trip. Holloway traveled with Mountain Brook, Alabama High School seniors and chaperones to Aruba on May 26th of 2005. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, and she never came
Okay.
home.
Yes.
And you know, they have
Yes.
never found this woman's body.
Yep.
And stuff like that, it doesn't sit right with me, you know. And I'm not saying that I'm going to come out here in the field later on in life and just solve all these unsolved mysteries and everything, you know, but I want to try
But wouldn't it
to
be
solve what I
great?
can.
But wouldn't it be great with us telling the stories and the cases that we do, if the public's attention was brought to whatever case it may be, and something were to happen.
Happens.
Exactly. Yeah. And exactly. Yeah. And that is my whole purpose with doing this podcast and everything, is just to bring awareness, because if we can find somebody, if we can save somebody, if we can have somebody that is able to defend themselves and is aware of their surroundings, to where they don't end up being one of these people who unfortunately were kidnapped, killed, murdered, whatever. That is my purpose.
Yeah.
That is my purpose right there. So.
Yep.
Oh God. Okay. So that, yeah, we have gotten this fired up tonight, girl.
Yeah. Oh man.
Okay.
Well, right. Going back to the case from tonight, I pretty much said all the information about him that I've got. But I did kind of want to shine some light. I've got the list of 47 of the names of the victims.
Okay.
But I will post this Sunday when we post episode and everything. I'll post this on our Facebook group.
Sure.
I'm just going to, because I'm going to kind of go through it a little quick. And some of these names I may not be pronouncing right, and I'm so, so, so sorry. But I've got Logan Evans, who's 88 years old. James Tyree, who's 69. Elizabeth Wyatt, who's 42. Eugene McQueen, 43. Harvey Williams, 82. Ben Gilbert, 81. Maude Nichols, I don't have an age. William Bowling, 58. Viola Reed Wyron, 63. Margaret Harrison, 91. Sam Carroll, 80. Maggie Rollins, I don't have an age. Silas Butner, 62. John Combs, 68. Milton Brian Sasser, 91. Helen Metzger, which was the neighbor of, that he murdered, 63. Henry Howler, 82. Howard Vetter, don't have an age. Hiram Prophet, no age. James Peluso, 65. Edward Wilson, no age. Nathany Watson, 65. Leon Nelson, 64. Virgil Weddle, 81. Lawrence Birdson, no age. Doris Nally, 65. Willie Johnson, no age. This one I might have trouble with. Edward Trebisis, I'm so sorry. I'm sure that's not right. 63. Robert Crockett, 80. Donald Barney, 91. James Wood, 65. Ernst Frey, 85. Milton Cantor, 85. Roger Evans, 74. Claiborne Kendrick, no age. Albert Booman, 69. William Collins, 85. Henry Cody, 78. Mose Thompson, 65. Otis Day, 72. Cleo Fish, 67. Leo Parker, 47. Margaret Kukrow, 80. Stella Lemon, 76. Joseph Pike, 68. Hilda Leitz, 82. And then John Powell, who I don't have an age.
Wow.
So it's a lot of names.
It is. And our hearts go out to all of their families and their loved ones. And we would just want to say that we are sorry, and your loved ones have not been forgotten. All right, guys. Well, that is going to be the end of this podcast for tonight. And we just want to say thank you for being a part of it with us. And we will see you guys again next week. Monsters do exist.
Don't be a victim.
Goodbye, bye, guys.